Stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Tommy McNeil reporting. Hurricane Irma is now a Category 3 storm, but is expected to re-strengthen as it barrels toward the east coast state of Florida. The state's governor, Rick Scott, has already warned that its effects can already be seen and felt, and says that those who are not evacuating now are taking unnecessary chances.
Just remember this. Once the storm starts, law enforcement cannot save you. I'm a dad, I'm a grandfather. I love my family more than anything. I cannot imagine life without them. Do not put your life or your family's life at risk. Right now is the time to do the right thing for you, yourself, and your family.
Sound courtesy of WTSB in Florida, he did not mince words about the storm's potential.
This is a deadly storm, and our state has never seen anything like it. Millions of Floridians will see major hurricane impacts with deadly storm surge and life-threatening winds.
And behind Irma is Hurricane Jose with similar strong winds and following the same route with the island of Barbuda and its path. Barbuda is virtually uninhabitable after Irma. Meantime, Hurricane Katia made landfall in Mexico late Friday, packing 120 kilometers per hour winds. Rescue efforts continue this Saturday in southern Mexico after a massive earthquake struck late Thursday that has killed at least 61 people. Mexican President Enrique Peña Nieto says that the quake was bigger than a 1985 earthquake that killed thousands. The latest struck off Mexico's southern Pacific coast and triggered a one-meter-high tsunami, although there were no immediate reports of tsunami damage. This is VOA News. U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations Nikki Haley is reminding Myanmar while Washington supports the fight against violence in northwestern Rakhine State, humanitarian aid must reach those in need. Rohingya insurgents have carried attacks to bring attention to their persecution. Clashes have killed at least 400 people and triggered the latest exodus of Rohingya villagers to Bangladesh. North Korea marked the 69th anniversary of its founding Saturday with typical ceremonies and fanfare as the international community watched for another potential missile test. The South Korean government said it was closely monitoring activity in the north. A speculation mounted about another missile launch that could be connected to the commemoration of the establishment in 1948 of the Democratic People's Republic of Korea. Earlier in the week, South Korea said it had seen signs of preparation for another missile test. But so far, by Saturday evening, no test had been detected. Meanwhile, the threat by North Korea and a nuclear attack has people in Japan on edge and making preparations. More from Reuters' Pascal Davies.
Last month, the regime launched a missile over Japan. And just last week, North Korea conducted its sixth and largest nuclear test. Japan's defense minister said on Wednesday that the test was estimated to have 160 kilotons. This is 10 times more powerful than the atomic bomb dropped in Hiroshima. In preparation, Japan has conducted several missile drills in coastal towns this year. The government has also tested J-alerts, a nationwide early warning system for possible missile attacks.
Saudi Arabia says it has suspended any dialogue with Qatar, accusing it of distorting facts just after reports that Saudi and Qatari leaders had spoken by phone and agreed to talks. Saudi Arabia's Saudi press agency said late Friday that a Qatari report about a phone call between the Qatari emir and the Saudi crown prince did not have any relevance to the truth. Qatari sources reported that two men agreed by telephone to appoint envoys for possible talks to work out the differences between Qatar and its neighbors. Indonesia and Malaysia are reminding foreigners of their claims in the crowded and contested South China Sea by destroying foreign boats that take fish from waters near their coastlines. Boat operators from China, Vietnam, and the Philippines often slip into waters off the Malaysian north coast of Borneo. In Indonesia, several boats have been destroyed, 317 fishing boats since 2014. I'm Tommy McNeil in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
We are here at the official launching of the presidential campaign of Mr. Charles Bromkin. Mr. Bromkin is running for president.
Liberian political parties officially launched their campaigns in the run-up to the October general election.
I was called and told that Tundu Lissu had been shot by unknown people and he was getting to his house. Then I rushed to the place to see what exactly happened. I found that his car was completely shattered with a machine gun fire.
A prominent Tanzanian lawmaker receives medical attention in Kenya after surviving an assassination attempt Thursday.
The SADC ministerial double troika was here on Thursday. It was a fact-finding mission to assess the situation in Lesotho after the killing of the Lieutenant General Mutu.
And the political situation in Lesotho returns to normal after the commander of the kingdom's defense force was shot dead Tuesday. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. It's 29 more days before the Liberian presidential and parliamentary elections scheduled for October 10 are held. Campaigning is in high gear, and today, one of the nearly 20 presidential candidates, Charles Bromkin of the Liberty Party, is officially launching his campaign in the capital, Monrovia. My colleague James Batty is there on assignment. Good evening, James.
Good evening to you and your listeners. Thank you very much.
What can you tell me about today's big political event in the Liberian capital, Monrovia?
I am in Monrovia, as you said, where elections, very important elections, are taking place October 10th. We are here at the official launching of the presidential campaign of Mr. Charles Bromkin. Mr. Bromkin is running for president for the third time. He did run in the 2005 and 2011 elections. I had a chance to talk with him earlier this week, and he told me that this time around, he's in the race to win it. His supporters have been gathering here at the party headquarters in the Congo Town section of the city early this morning. In fact, we were told that some people have begun gathering here, or even they slept here. Peter?
From your vantage point, what can you tell us about the number of people at this rally so far?
Well, right now, I cannot say exactly how many people are here because the crowds are still gathering. In addition, it seems there is some sensitivity about crowd size. When you talk about the size of a political campaign, it's crowds. Particularly since the Mr. George Weah of the Coalition for Democratic Change launched his campaign here in Monrovia about a month ago, people have been very sensitive. It is said that we are shut down the city now. So these days, when you talk to people about crowd size, they tend to compare that with the crowd size of George Weah. So right now, we are not in the position to say, because here the crowds are still gathering. So I have some people here. I have some supporters of Mr. Bromkin here. What's your name?
Madeline Kwa.
Could you tell me why you support him?
I really he will win.
You think that he will win?
He will win.
Why?
Well, he will win.
What's your name?
My name is Patrick Gita.
Why do you support him?
I support Bromkin. The reason being, it's very simple. One is between the town of the Douala Red issue where he put the lodges during Chabelot town. At the time he was celebrating. That day was not time. It was in the interest of the Liberian. The second reason there is when Leonis was granted right to buy property in the country, which of course is the bone, and it was in the interest of the Liberian again. That's the two major reasons I support Walker Brownskin.
But it seems that he has some competition. He has the vice president of Liberia, he has George Weah, he has Alexander Comet. Do you think he can win over these people?
Sure.
That has support.
Why do you support him?
I support him because he stands for the children, stands for the Liberian people, and I feel he's the best person that can rule this country, that can lead this country.
Why do you think he's the best person to rule the country?
In fact, he has done a lot for us. It takes a man who will make sacrifices, such as denying bills that will benefit he alone and his children for the masses. He's done it when he spent 1 year, 6 months in the Senate. There are so many bills that are against the Liberian people that he stood against those bills. Today we have lawmakers that they are not doing that. Out of the specific concession agreement, we have only one correct. When he was there, Liberian businesses were torn. He raised it from 12 to 26. When he was there, rest monopoly, they came up with data of every black arrest. And according to statistics in this country, we see over 1 million black arrests. If transit in short, you will earn over 1 million every month. You repeated that. So I believe that he stands for the truth, corruption, the league government will be corruption free, and he stands for the market.
Thank you very much, sir. So nice to talk with you. Peter, there you have it. You heard from some supporters. They call themselves diehard supporter of Mr. Brownskin. It's a kind of a carnival atmosphere here at the headquarters of the Liberty Party.
That's my colleague James Batty, who is on assignment in Liberia to cover the upcoming elections. He spoke with me from Monrovia. A Tanzanian lawmaker, Tundu Lissu, who is also president of the Tanganyika Law Society, is in critical but stable condition as he receives medical treatment at a Kenyan hospital following an assassination attempt. The parliamentarian was attacked by unknown assailants who reportedly followed him and fired at least 25 live bullet rounds into his car. Lissu had left parliament to his house for lunch when he was attacked. Freeman Mbowe, chairman of the main opposition Chadema, accompanied Lissu to Kenya for medical treatment. I reached him in the capital, Nairobi, to find out what happened and how the lawmaker is currently feeling.
I was in an office meeting with Honorable Tundu Lissu in my office in Dodoma, and we left each other at around 1:30 in the afternoon. I was going to a parliamentary seminar, and he was going home for lunch, and then we had to meet there after. When I went into the seminar, 5 minutes later, I was called and told that Tundu Lissu had been shot by unknown people as he was getting to his house. Then I rushed to the place to see what exactly happened. I found that his car was completely shattered with a machine gun fire, and Honorable Lissu was badly hurt, and he was rushed to General Hospital in Dodoma, where doctors were busy trying to save his life. He was badly hurt with severe injury into his stomach, legs, arms, everywhere. His car was shattered with more than 25 live bullets. And apparently the assassins were people who were following his car as soon as he left the parliamentary gate on his way to his residence in Area B.
How is he doing at the moment after you evacuated him to Nairobi, where he's receiving medical attention at the moment?
He has a lot of injuries because a lot of bullets went through his body. And he had to undergo some, operations in the theater. He was in the theater for 7 hours today, from 10 o'clock in the morning until about 6 in the evening. And he's now in the intensive unit of the Nairobi hospital. His situation, his condition is critical, but he's stable. There's nothing that is life-threatening at this stage. But the doctors are still doing some further investigation and trying to see exactly the extent of the damage. Because as you know, when you have 21 bullets running through your body, definitely there are so many damages that must have been caused. Yes.
We heard reports that he complained to colleagues like you that he was being followed and that he was being threatened. You reported it to the police. What happened?
Nothing took place. Actually, we had a press conference with Honorable Lissu 3 weeks ago, where we disclosed the truth about how our aircraft was seized in Montreal, Canada. And in that very press conference, Honorable Lissu, in front of the fraternity of media, he said that has been tested, has been followed by unknown people for the last 4 weeks. And he reported the case to the police, he reported the case to the chief of intelligence, but no any kind of action was taken. And we say categorically that there has been a lot of incidents which were life-threatening for Honorable Lissu's life. But our commanders from the security forces took no action of any kind whatsoever. He was not given any kind of protection. But as you know, Honorable Lissu has been a maverick critic of the President Magufuli's rule since when he came into power.
President John Pemba Magufuli has condemned the attack. However, it's not clear if an investigation has begun into what led to the attack and why he was targeted. If I may ask you, have you heard of anything since you are a lawmaker, you are a colleague, you are an opposition leader? Have you heard anything from the government about an investigation into the attempted assassination of your friend and colleague, Tundu Lissu?
The opposition in general, they've been going through a very hard time because in so many occasions we have been caught and put into the custody by the government. And most of the time, of course, again, our people will be read into the courts and the government will take no action. So we please plead to the international community to see the deteriorating situation in Tanzania. And it's true that democracy in Tanzania had taken root. But what we're seeing of recent in Tanzania is a fast deterioration of stability in the country, the continuing shrinking of democratic space in Tanzania, lack of observation of human rights, lack of the rule of law, the constitution has not been respected, the opposition is being oppressed.
Freeman Mbowe is the chairman of the Tanzanian main opposition party, Chadema. He spoke with me from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. The spokesman for the Prime Minister of the Kingdom of Lesotho says an army officer has been arrested in connection with the murder of Lieutenant General Hwantle Motsomotso, Army Commander of the Lesotho Defense Force. At a press conference Tuesday, Prime Minister Thomas Tabani said the murder is a serious setback to vigorous efforts to restore peace and stability. The murder of the Army Commander forced the Southern African Development Community, or SADC, to send an emissary to ascertain the situation in Lesotho after condemning the killing of the Army Commander. For the latest development, I reached Thabo Takwalekwala, a spokesman for Prime Minister Thomas Tabani in the capital, Maseru.
The investigation is still continuing, and one army officer has been arrested in connection with that killing. And I'm sure you are aware that the SADC ministerial double troika was here on Thursday. It was a fact-finding mission to assess the situation in Lesotho after the killing of the Lieutenant General Motsomotso. Now, after their meeting with different stakeholders, they said that they are now going back to the SADC headquarters in Botswana, where they are going to compile a report. And it is expected that after reading that report, President Zuma will convene an Asian meeting of the SADC double troika to discuss the situation in Lesotho.
The president said people of Lesotho and SADC are tired of Lesotho having the bad image of the only country in the Southern Africa region with a lot of problems. Does this latest killing of Lieutenant General Motsomotso complicate his work to shed the so-called bad boy image of the Kingdom of Lesotho in the region?
No, it doesn't complicate it at all. Actually, what it does, it makes it even more urgent for SADC to attend to the problems of Lesotho. Because all along, SADC has been playing it very cool with what is happening in Lesotho. They have been too soft. And now the situation has become so serious that SADC is forced to take a drastic and urgent measures to remedy the situation in Lesotho. So I think now SADC realizes that they must react immediately and decisively to end the problems that Lesotho is facing right now.
Prime Minister Tom Tabani promised to have security sector reforms during the campaign. Will he go ahead with the security sector reform, or will this latest killing of Lieutenant General Motomoto make it more difficult for him to carry out his promise to undertake or carry out his security sector reform?
The killing of the army of the Lesotho Defense Force makes it even more urgent for the Prime Minister to implement reforms. About a month ago, when Pretoria, South Africa, attending the SADC summit, and he reiterated once more that he is still committed to implementing reforms. And what is happening right now in Lesotho is that we are initiating a multi-stakeholder national dialogue aimed at discussing ways and means of how to implement reforms, especially security reforms. So security reforms, as far as this government is concerned, are a priority. And this government is going ahead. Come rain or shine, this government is going to implement those security reforms.
Some people are expressing concern in Lesotho that the killing is yet another attempt to destabilize the kingdom. Is that the assessment of Prime Minister Tom Tabani, that the killing could destabilize or plunge the country into chaos?
Not necessarily into chaos. Well, what is happening is that some opposition political leaders are implicated in some very serious crimes. And some of them have even fled to South Africa as we speak. Now, we know the kind of influence that the past government was having on the army, on some members, especially senior officers of the army. And those senior officers of the army are also implicated in the murder of the former army commander, Lieutenant General Maparangwe Mao. They're implicated in the bombings that took place in Maseru, involving the house of the prime minister, the house of the chief of police, and some killings that were carried out. So they want to cover up their crimes using those army officers who were implicated in the murder of Lieutenant General Maparangwe Mahau.
Thabo Takwalekwala is the spokesman for the Prime Minister of the Kingdom of Lesotho, Thomas Tabani. He spoke with me from Maseru. There is growing concern over gruesome and unresolved murders of Ugandan women. Over the past 2 months, 28 women have been murdered and their bodies dumped by the roadside in the Wakiso district, where Entebbe International Airport and State House are located. The mysterious murders have led to speculation that rogue security officers are complicit in the killings, or that they may be ritual killings by businessmen. My colleague Douglas Mpuga reached Charles Mwanguya Mpaji, bureau chief for the East African, a major regional newspaper in the Ugandan capital Kampala, to find out more about the killings.
It's been a major concern, especially for women, given that the pattern and the brutality of the killing and the fact that there hasn't been a real coherent explanation from the authorities, including the police and the government.
So we understand that the Ugandan parliament took this issue up. What were the results?
Parliament was called out of recess for a special session. The speaker called them out of recess to get a statement from the government on what exactly is going on. And the Minister for Internal Affairs made a presentation to Parliament. And the answer that he gave was that some of the murders are related to ritual sacrifice or killings. Others are also related to the same of religious cultism. But it's been hardly convincing to anybody that someone following, for example, the Illuminati religious cult, for example, would orchestrate the murder of up to 8 women in Nansan Clone, and then another one related to the desire to search for blood of the victim, would lead to the death of so many others. He says, the minister said some of the other things have been related to domestic violence issues, disagreements between lovers, or boyfriends, girlfriends, husband and wife. But the answers are hardly convincing to anybody who has listened to the minister and has seen the different versions that the police have come up with.
Some of these murders have occurred, as you say, in the Entebbe area. This is an area where there is even the presidential mansion and there's very heavy security. How possible is it that these matters could be happening in such a secured place?
I think that's the most unsettling thing to most Ugandans. Because Entebbe is, it has Uganda's only international airport. It has the residence of the president. It has a lot of high-profile government offices. It has also the base of the United Nations. So that the murders can be happening here and that no arrests are being made is quite a matter of big concern. How is it possible that of all places, what is supposed to be the most secure part of the country is now where murders are happening? And you wake up in the morning and find a body of a hapless woman who has been murdered and violated in extremely gruesome ways. Because you might already have heard that some of these women have been reported to have been found raped, and not just raped, but that their killers stuff sticks into their private parts, which is extremely gruesome.
NRM government, Museveni's government, which has been in power for over 30 years, has claimed to have brought stability and peace in the country. Do these murders undermine that claim?
I think they do in a significant way, and not just the murders of the women, but waves of murders that have gone largely unexplained. Douglas, you might want to remember that only in March this year, there was the Bode murder of the Deputy Inspector General of Police, who was police spokesperson, Andrew Felix Kawese. In 2015, there had been an evening murder in a very well-developed city suburb of a deputy director at the Directorate of Public Prosecution, Joan Kagezi. Before that, we had murders of people using iron bars who were hitting at people, especially women, going to work, and other people returning in the night.
Charles Monguye Mpaji is the bureau chief for the East African, a major regional newspaper. He spoke with my colleague Douglas Mpuga from Kampala. The head of United Nations peacekeeping says rising ethnic tensions in the Central African Republic are likely to spur greater conflict between the Muslim and Christian communities unless action is taken to defuse the situation. For VOA, Lisa Schlein has more from Geneva.
UN Undersecretary General for Peacekeeping Operations Jean-Pierre Lacroix says ethnic hate speech is running in parallel with an increase in violence in Central African Republic, and he says he finds this very worrisome.
We're seeing a surge in very negative messages, very negative and antagonistic rhetoric, to the effect that foreigners should be quote-unquote foreigners should be eliminated, putting one ethnic component or religious component of this country against the other, and this is very worrying and serious.
Lacroix says it is a key responsibility of the leadership and all those who have an influence in Central African Republic to counter those messages. War between the Muslim Seleka and Christian Balaka armed groups broke out in 2013 after Seleka rebels toppled the Christian president François Bozizé. Peacekeeping Chief Lacroix tells VOA every effort is being made to redeploy UN forces on the ground to try to mitigate the impact of this violence and to protect civilians.
We do protect thousands of them, again, in different locations in the Central African Republic. We really not only protect them physically from those who want to go after them, but also we help them get humanitarian assistance, even though this is becoming quite challenging in many areas.
The war in Central African Republic has about 500,000 internally displaced people and has caused an almost equal number to seek refuge in neighboring countries. The United Nations reports about one half of CAR's population of 2.4 million people needs food aid to survive. Lacroix says the United Nations is trying to reconcile the two ethnic communities by working with religious, civic, and political leaders from different walks of life. He says it is crucial to move the political process forward in Central African Republic to achieve a durable peace. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotin, in Washington, D.C. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. And right now it's time for music from our African collection. Young D.
Bere 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 b up, no throw back money, mo. My head, yo. I ain't checking fresh in my wallet. My head, yo. I rebo gushi, bajo chai bekada. My head, yo. Moseri ramanjago, sunde waya. My head, yo. Mo, eh, eh.
Oh,
Are you ready?
Mastercraft on the beat.
Let go. Let go.
Dangerous. The way you do, girl, you are dangerous. Anytime I see you move it, girl, you are dangerous.
Let go.
Baby girl, you are dangerous.
Yeah.
good boy alongside the very papa.
little like a with a brick bucket up. Sexy like my on the floor. Oh yeah, check it in, bubba. Yeah, when I see you, oh boy, I confuse, oh. Confuse, yeah, I say, wait till you ask, I don't go refuse, oh. I don't go refuse, yeah. And I go JJ for you whenever you're down. I say for you, them girls that go back. We can go, yeah, I study all over the town. Your papa, they beg, I go beat down your house.
You say make a wait,
girl, I go wait.
You are ready, just let me know, no. You say make a wait for your love, I go wait. Oh, girl. So when you're ready, just let me know, no. Ooh. What a wine, kai jebe. Kai jebe.
Kai jebe.
What a wine, ebe lebe. Girl, I go wait.
Girl, I go wait. Oh.
So whenever you are ready, just let me know, no.
Yeah.
You say make a wait for your love, I go wait.
Girl, I go wait. Oh.
So when you're ready, just let me know, no.
Yeah.
Rain on the mix.
Rain on the mix.
And that was Music from the Continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Night Lion Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Night Lion team, managing editor Shaka Sale, reporter Douglas Mpuga, producer Odette Frazier, and our engineer for today, Justin Thwaite, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, he who gives a monkey as a present doesn't keep hold of its tail. I'm your host, Peter Clotter in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
For over 60 years, UN peacekeeping missions have operated in some of the most dangerous and difficult environments in the world. Peacekeepers provide stability and prevent fresh outbreaks of violence, and in doing so, assist war-torn countries in their transition from conflict to peace. As today's security challenges have grown more complex and dangerous, UN peacekeeping missions often include political, military, and human rights aspects that have caused us to ask more of our peacekeepers. They are expected to de-escalate tensions, prevent fresh outbreaks of conflict, and protect civilians. This level of complexity makes comprehensive training imperative. The United States and India have a long history of supporting international peacekeeping efforts. The United States is the largest financial contributor to UN peacekeeping operations, while India is one of the largest contributors of peacekeepers. So it only makes sense that these two countries would be involved in the training of UN peacekeepers. In July, the two countries jointly hosted the second annual U.S.-India-UN peacekeeping course for African partners, which is a 3-week course for military personnel who train peacekeepers in their own countries. The course aimed to build the capacity of African nations contributing troops to UN peacekeeping missions and covered topics dealing with operational and logistical matters and humanitarian issues. Military officers from Benin, Ethiopia, Ghana, Guinea, Kenya, Malawi, Namibia, Niger, Nigeria, Rwanda, Senegal, Sierra Leone, South Africa, Tanzania, Togo, Uganda, and Zambia attended the course. This training will help ensure that a new generation of peacekeepers will achieve the highest standards necessary for mission success. Mary Kay Carlson, U.S. Chargé d'Affaires in New Delhi, described the significance of the course and the larger peacekeeping cooperation effort between the two countries as part of the transformation of the U.S.-India bilateral relationship into a global partnership. She continued saying, "The United States and India are working together not only for the benefit of our two nation citizens, but also to improve lives across the globe. The designation last year of India as a major defense partner of the United States further underscores the importance of our two nations as net security providers in the global arena. This course is a great example of what we are doing together."
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.